This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Thousands of Medicaid recipients in North Carolina are being denied government assistance for personal care services. The denial rate surged last year after the Department of Health and Human Services issued new rules for personal care eligibility. Evaluators are now rejecting applicants at a rate nearly four times higher than before the changes. Joining me now is Michael Gebelein. He's a reporter for the Carolina Public Press, and he's been covering the story. He joins me from partner station WCQS in Asheville. Hello, Michael.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell me more about this. We're talking about thousands of Medicaid recipients who are now being denied personal care services. Let's start there. What do I mean when I say personal care service?
Personal care services are related to help with tasks of daily living, like eating, bathing, taking medication, putting clothes on, the things people have to do in their everyday lives.
All right. And so these are things that in some cases you would be eligible for Medicaid if all the other criteria are met. So tell us about these rule changes that have changed the eligibility. What changed in determining eligibility?
Well, they're fairly subtle changes to the assessment guidelines. So one of the things that I found was, for instance, if a woman has difficulty fastening her brassiere, and if that's the only thing she has trouble with, the state determined that that individual can then be denied eligibility for those personal care services based on that one criteria.
So how does the assessment go? I'm assuming that there's an entire process and a vetted eligibility company or individual would go in and make this determination. How's it go?
Yes, the company that handles Medicaid eligibility assessments is called Liberty Healthcare, and they're a national company. They do have a North Carolina branch. And an assessor will come in and ask the Medicaid recipient or the resident to simulate these different tasks. So simulate the hygienic aspects of toileting, simulate putting on their clothes, simulate eating. And that's how they use that assessment to determine whether or not that person actually needs help from a care staff individual with those tasks.
Did that change? Was that any change in the eligibility assessment, a change from simulating to actually being able to carry it out? I understand that at one point showing me you could do it was the assessment. Am I right?
Yeah, I think the simulation aspect of it is especially important related to the bathing. They want to allow people to remain fully clothed while they're doing these assessments. So I think that was one of the big changes.
Right. And so what's been the impact of this now? You say the relatively subtle changes, but I understand that thousands of people are now being denied eligibility.
Yeah, well, in some cases, it really depends on the beneficiary's individual kind of attributes. If a person in an assisted living facility has another place to go, if they have a relative they can go stay with, that person is discharged from the facility and then they have to find another living situation. If they don't, a facility can't just throw someone out on the street. So if a beneficiary doesn't have anywhere else to go, a lot of times the facilities are absorbing the cost of caring for these people.
Well, therein lies another important element in this. You're looking specifically at this kind of care delivered at an assisted living facility, right?
Correct.
And why is it there? Why is this only affecting assisted living facilities? Why not at-home care?
I think that's a difficult question to answer. I believe it may have something to do with, some policy ideological.
And I think there's a lawsuit too that focused on home care that had an impact on this in the sense that
there is, yes, and it seems the state may be a bit more inclined to try to allow people to stay in their homes and receive that care in home rather than at these facilities.
Is the standard different for people at home than in the facility?
Not after that lawsuit, no.
So tell us more about that lawsuit. It's called Pettigrew versus
Pettigrew and Brazier, yes. And what it was, there were some differences in the assessment processes between in-home care and assisted living facilities. So from what I understand, at an assisted living facility, a Medicaid beneficiary automatically receives assistance with meal preparation, because these facilities have kitchens with, you know, professional cooks who prepare the meals. That was not the case with individuals receiving in-home care. So the lawsuit was saying, in essence, that the standard for receiving hour approval at an assisted living facility, that they were receiving more hours in a facility than they would at home.
But it seems like the effect of the lawsuit then was to make the criteria more rigid for assisted living facilities rather than to relax the standard for at-home care.
Correct. And from what I understand, the state really had the option of going one way or the other. And at DHHS, they decided to go with the tighter restrictions overall.
So do you have a sense of how the denial rate has changed after the state implemented these new tighter guidelines?
Well, I believe that the increase in denials that I found through my research was related to this lawsuit, simply in preparation for the settlement. So I think they're all tied together.
Right. So there was an approval rate of almost 95% of Medicaid beneficiaries beforehand. Is that right?
Correct.
At assisted living facilities, and that has now changed.
Yes. Yeah.
So how do they fit into the larger picture? Because, again, you know, here's the state government, the legislature and governor opted out of expanding Medicaid. That left 500,000 North Carolinians off the rolls that could have been covered. And so now this is even more limited access. Do we know how this fits in the big picture?
I think this is kind of part and parcel to that overall sense of not wanting to participate in the Medicaid program at the state level. I think this is really just reflective of that ideological, you know, sort of across the board.
A refusal to participate and
right.
to try to limit eligibility and to limit the number of people who can be helped by Medicaid. DHHS, have you heard from DHHS or Liberty Healthcare on these restrictions? Have they told you anything? Any comments from them?
When I spoke with the executive director for Liberty by email, she told me that she was not in a position to comment on the hour allocation for personal care services. And DHHS was very forthcoming with records related to these services, but once we kind of got down to the nitty-gritty of what I was looking at, they did not speak with me.
All right, so very little comment, no comment from Liberty.
Correct.
And only records, but no comment on the effect of this from DHHS. What
Correct.
Has been the effect? We're talking about thousands of people now who have lost Medicaid coverage for this service. Have you talked to any of them? What has it meant for them?
I've been unable to really speak with any beneficiaries just because of privacy laws. But I do know from some of the providers that I've spoken with on background that for some of these people who have had to move out of these facilities, I mean, this could be fairly devastating for somebody who is in a routine in a facility. They're receiving the help that they need, and then all of a sudden they're no longer able to get that help. It puts a lot of stress on, you know, the individual Medicaid recipient, their families, and the providers as well.
And I guess it also raises questions about those who remain, because as I understand it, what you said earlier was that the facilities, if they find that you've been denied this care and you absolutely do need it because you can't get along without it, whatever the assessors found, they will send you home if they can. If they can't, then they have to keep you there, provide the service, and not be reimbursed. That does suggest that at a certain point, these assisted care facilities are going to have to raise their rates on everybody, making it more difficult, again, at lower income levels to get that kind of help.
Correct, yeah, and they have to decide where they want to spend the resources that, you know, are now more limited than they were before.
So any idea going forward whether or not there are additional lawsuits pending? Is this the end? Has DHHS, because as I understand it, there were two rounds of this rule changes from DHHS. There was one rule change, and then they did a second one that tightened the eligibility requirements even more. Am I right?
Correct, yes.
All right.
Well, I think, you know, you have providers and advocates, you know, working in the background to try to change some of these standards again. Whether that will happen is really up in the air at this point.
But they did do two rounds in the first round. Do you have any idea why they went to the second round, and any indication that perhaps the cuts just weren't deep enough? They weren't cutting the budget far enough?
That's very possible. Yeah, I couldn't say for certain.
Yeah. Well, Michael, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Michael Gibeline is a reporter for the Carolina Public Press. He joined me today from member station WCQS in Asheville. Just ahead, the life and legacy of writer and journalist Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and you'll hear about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.